Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status is the only K-12 data analytics platform designed to turn analysis into engagement. To learn more about how School Status can change your school district, head over to schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, episode 25, and I'm your host, Nick Ortigo. Sign of the times, a Florida school showing parents how they can buy ballistic armor for their kids' backpacks. Puerto Rican schools are trying to bounce back, but some are trying to slam on the brakes. And one California school district has sent a bunch of parents to a collection agency over school bus rides. Stay with us. Class Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through story. Each week we cover some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education, plus we speak with a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. This week we're chatting with the Texas Teacher of the Year, but it's also a great story of perseverance, because this incredible educator actually dropped out of high school at one point. It's an interview you won't want to miss. Hey everybody, Nick Ortigo here, and I'm joined with student data expert Russ Davis of School Status and teacher extraordinaire Lissa Pruitt. Lissa, how are you doing?
I'm great.
Russ, how's it going over there?
Doing great, man.
Thanksgiving is right around the corner, next week actually, so big plans for anybody? We frying turkeys or what?
I'm not frying a turkey because I do not want to burn my house down, but I am preparing a lovely roasted bird.
Are you really preparing it, Russ?
I prepare, anytime we have Thanksgiving at my house, I prepare the turkey. I will tell you a horror story very, very quickly that it's a joke now because about, I don't know, probably 2009 or 10 or somewhere around there, I had my whole family up and I just got back from vacation and I had actually ordered a turkey already prepared from a local grocery store because that's what they were touting. And I went to my local Kroger to pick up the turkey.
Kroger's not a sponsor.
The turkey was frozen.
Wow.
And this was the day before.
Yeah.
The day before.
You can't
unfreeze a turkey.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so, like, there's this big joke now at Thanksgiving about, are we going to have pizza this year? Because we had Domino's pizza for Thanksgiving as our main course because we had no other protein.
Whenever I think about roasting a turkey, I think of that scene in Christmas Vacation where, you know what I'm talking
little
about?
Dry.
It's okay. Like,
yeah.
Anyhow, well, hopefully you guys have a great Thanksgiving. We still will be kicking out a show that week, so be sure to tune in. Lissa, what do you know? What's going on in the Teacher's Lounge?
Well, back to Florida, Miami-Dade County, there is a non-denominational private school, K-12, that is allowing parents the option to purchase a bulletproof insert to put in the school backpack.
So I saw this story and I thought it was fake news. Like,
why? Why do you think that's fake?
Did you see the photo?
It seemed too, I don't know, the timing was weird and it just seemed like, I don't know.
Well, I'll be honest, after Columbine, there was all kinds of binders that were bulletproof.
Yeah.
You could buy a bulletproof binder. I remember that.
But the fact that a school's selling it through their website is kind of what...
Now, the school is not selling it. There is a parent that is the owner-operator of Applied Fiber Concepts, and he went through a training that the school does with children and parents on what we do during disasters. It was just kind of a orientation kind of thing. So he was sitting through the training, and what they tell the students to do is to get on the floor and put the backpack over your body, to hunch up and cover your main torso. And so as he's sitting here, you know, going through this training as a parent, he realized, you know, I have something that I could insert. So he kind of manufactured it just for his two children.
Yeah.
And it just slides flush in the back of their backpack so that when they're holding it over them, it's more than just a book, you know.
Right.
But then he was approached of just, hey, do you want to, because other parents were saying, well, we want one. Well, we want one. It's $120.
Yeah.
And so the school is not selling them. They just allowed the form to be placed on their website that they can print out the form from home.
Yeah.
Yeah, just so you know, this is one of our parents that has this if you want it. And so I think there's a lot of people that want it and then some people that, you know, are like, no.
What do you think, Russ? Is this crazy or is this makes
sense? Two thoughts. One, after everything that's happened in the news recently, I just want to say that I'm disgusted that this has to be a thing.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I'm I'm so sick of mass shootings, and I don't know what to do about it, you know? I don't know the solution. I don't know what it is, but this is just a thing now where we sell bulletproof backpacks, right, and we have shot spotters in our schools that determine the triangulation of where bullets are fired. Like,
and that's kind of why I thought maybe it was fake news, because I was like, is this just kind of one of those stories that's like, it's almost like sarcasm? Like, this is the world we live in.
Like The Onion
now.
Or something.
Yeah, it almost kind of like The Onion, but no, this is real life.
Couple of thoughts. Number one, the chances of a child getting involved in a school shooting is incredibly, incredibly remote. Like, all the things that we worry about, like, I know it's something that makes us feel better, but we are far more likely to die on the way to school flu.
Right.
And I wonder how many kids are walking around without a flu shot. Like, it's just kind of, it's crazy. And I think it's kind of alarmist, and it makes people feel better for something that's just, I'll be honest with you, it's just statistically, it's almost, you could say with confidence, like people say, what should I tell my kids about school shootings? You used to say, it'll never happen to you, because it won't. Like, the statistics bear out that it probably will never happen to them in their lifetime. The chances of a school shooting taking place in a U.S. elementary or middle school in any given year is 1 in 141,463. Now, that's the odds of it happening in a school. Multiply that by the number of students. Like, it's just it does not happen.
Yeah, but I still buy a Powerball ticket, and those odds are even worse.
You know? Yeah, I get that, but that's like the odds of a good thing happening. Like, yeah. You know, I can understand that, but there's some psychology here of children knowing that they go to a place where they have to wear a bulletproof backpack in order to possibly save them from the opportunity of a mass killing.
That's true. From a psychological standpoint,
I just have a huge problem. That I would never like.
Well, but if you think about it, their training says for them to put their backpack. I mean, that is a drill that you practice now. It is. So they don't necessarily even have to know that thing in their backpack is bulletproof, you know what I mean?
It's on the school website. I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
that's...
I'm just saying, but they're going to grab for that backpack. So they could honestly think every day they put their backpack on, hope I don't have to cover my body with this today, you know, once they've done that training. I mean, it's eerie in a school to do.
It's very much like Cold War when you do the drills.
Right, and it's eerie when you do those type of trainings with your children, because everybody, it definitely looms over to where everyone's like, but that could never happen, right? And of course you say, no, it's not going to happen. We just practice just in case. But yeah, I mean.
I would equate it to this. You don't buy a parachute before you get on an airplane, and you're far more likely to die in an aviation disaster or on the way there than you are to die in a school shooting.
This is true.
They shouldn't have allowed the form to be downloadable and printable from their site? You think the school maybe should have said, nah?
I think that if you're trying to support somebody that it's not a public school. So, if it were, I don't have a problem with them putting it on there if they're trying to support somebody local. But I think we should address the larger issue of why the hell do we have to have these things in the first place? Like, that's the issue that as a society we should be addressing. That, you know, depending on who you ask, there were something like 306 mass shootings so far this year alone. Like, that's the real issue that we should probably be looking at, as opposed to debating whether bulletproof backpacks are the way to go. Like, that's a society I don't want to live in. I don't want to live in a society where we have to carry bulletproof backpacks to prevent our children from getting shot.
Same.
All right. Well, I know, Russ, you've got a topic.
Sorry, I know that's like... I get very passionate about it, but like, I don't know what else to say other than just utter disgust. Like, I don't know.
I think that's actually a good stopping point. Like, I mean, I think a lot of people would agree with you.
My article is a little different, but it's still a little on the Debbie Downer side. But it's talking about Puerto Rico and what's going on in public education right now there. So I'm from the South, so I live in Mississippi. And during Hurricane Katrina, I actually rode out the storm with a friend of mine in Hattiesburg. And it was utter devastation. And working in education, I worked with a lot of schools that were just destroyed. Like, a lot of school districts had schools that were destroyed. They had, you know, sometimes a third or even half of their population in some schools displaced. And probably from an educational standpoint, no body was more affected than the New Orleans Public School District, which was already kind of fraught with controversy. Mm-hmm. Some folks that went to jail, like the schools just weren't in great shape.
Yeah, private schools are very big there in New Orleans.
Private schools are really the only option now, or not private, but charters are really the only option there now. There isn't really a school district like there was before. Like they've basically ceded control of their schools to charter schools, which is, you know, I'm not going to go into the pro or against charter schools. There are a whole lot of charter schools in Louisiana now. There's a big debate now about Puerto Rico, which also wasn't knocking the doors off of education, you know, from an achievement standpoint, about what should we do with these schools? Should we build back our existing public school infrastructure, or should we, you know, create a recovery school district and put, like New Orleans put over 100 schools that converted to charter, which are publicly funded and privately managed. And so there are two schools of thought. One is that we should adopt what New Orleans did, and, you know, create schools that are privately, are publicly funded but privately managed. And there's another school of thought that public education, like you should rebuild your public schools. It's a terrible opportunity to have,
right?
But you can't go, but like that horse is out of the barn, right? You can't go back and make the hurricane not happen. If we could, then we'd be in much better shape, right? Now I think there's a big discussion about what is the educational system that we want in Puerto Rico.
What I found interesting in the article was, it sounds like the people who are very close with, say, a particular school, they've gone in and fixed it up and they've opened the doors. And then the government turns around and says, no, not yet. We're not ready for that. And they're kind of like, no, we're ready. We're going to teach. And they're basically ignoring the local government there. And they're just going ahead and doing this. I don't know at what point, you know, somebody's going to swoop in and say, all right, this is now a charter school, if they're going to use that New Orleans model or what. But clearly the folks who helped build the New Orleans model after Katrina are actually consulting.
Strongly advocating.
Yeah, and they're consulting with the Puerto Rican folks.
Yeah, and look, I don't think anyone argues that what happened in New Orleans, like the state of the schools in New Orleans needed to change. Like, I think that that's generally accepted. The outcomes, though, are very debatable about whether students are just incredibly better off than they were before, or whether, you know, like some charters are doing well and other charters aren't, but some schools were doing okay and other schools weren't. And so they had 317,000 kids. But what's going to happen is a lot of what happened after Katrina, and we saw this along the Gulf Coast and in New Orleans as well, is that you're going to have a huge population drop off. So lots and lots of these students are flowing into Florida and New York and other places. So you're going to have to close some schools, which is a very public, hard thing to do. Closing schools is a third rail of politics, right? If you close a school where somebody went to school, they take it very personally, no matter if it's, you know, the best interest or not. We see this all the time. You have these schools where the school districts where you see a 20% drop in population, but they keep the same number of schools open, and it becomes a financial drain. So just this year, Puerto Rico had seen an 11% drop, and this was before the hurricane. They'd already closed 167 schools over the summer as families continue to migrate to the U.S. So there is something that's needed to be done in Puerto Rico. I don't think it's 100% charters. And I don't know that necessarily these guys are advocating for that, but it is locally controlled. At some point, folks should have a say into what their schools are.
They should have a big say. You know, they should have a feeling and a heartbeat of what should happen. And, you know, obviously natural disasters are awful, but some things were broken beforehand, and this is a great opportunity for new growth, you know, to go in a more positive direction, and I hope they find it.
What there's not enough of is there's not enough coverage out of Puerto Rico, unfortunately.
No, it's like it didn't even happen.
It's like it didn't happen, and half the country still has no power, and you still have all these school issues.
Way over half. Like, they just had a major line disruption,
right?
And now it's back down to 18% of the population. And I read today where some of the Army resources were starting to pull out and go back to what they were doing. Like,
I mean, if it were sitting next to the mainland, I think you would have media just flooding the place and telling these stories on a daily basis, and we're not hearing that. So kudos to The Intercept, who wrote the article about the school district there, kind of keeping a focus.
And it's a great article.
Yeah.
It's well written and well researched. And let's not forget, these aren't foreign citizens these aren't foreigners that we're talking about. These are people that are U.S. citizens by birthright.
I've got one for you guys that I had no idea this happened or happens. Did you know that in some school districts they charge to ride the school bus?
No.
Have you ever heard of
that?
Yes.
No.
This story is out of San Diego, and apparently 12 states, not all of them do it, but 12 states actually have laws in place where a school district can charge to ride a school bus. And this San Diego Unified District, apparently not only do they charge, but they also are sending parents to collection agencies when they aren't paying.
Oh, gosh.
And there's kind of somewhat of an uproar about it for multiple reasons. One of those just has to be the fact that the way like it's even structured, just because you're on, say, the free lunch program doesn't mean that you actually can get a free bus ride. And so some people are calling this a tax on the poor, essentially, because those who need to use the bus to get their kids to school are now having to pay
for that bus. Gosh, I thought that was the whole point of the bus, was providing everyone a means to an education.
It's $500 for a kid.
Right.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. And then they let them ride the bus throughout the year, even if you aren't paying, but then they will send you to collections if you don't pay at the end. And so far, it's a news site out of San Diego called The Voice of San Diego. And they found that the district referred 380 parents to a collection agency for debts that ranged from $10 to $500.
But like, why are they charging? Just because they made budget cuts, so they decided, we're gonna X out all the buses, and if you want to ride, you got
to
pay?
In the story, they're like, we cannot afford to bus everyone to school, which I find hard to believe.
They have a $1.3 billion budget. You can't find money for public transportation at a $1.3 billion.
There's some wasted money there somewhere, I'm sure.
Well, there's got to be, because that's like you're.
It's $1 billion.
A child at a disadvantage. If they have parents that work and leave even before school starts to go to their hourly job, working hard, and they have a child that relies on that to get to school, and then of course then they can't afford to pay, this makes me very angry.
It actually dates back to 1992. The California Supreme Court, they ruled that transportation is not an essential element of school activity.
Are
and
you
thus
serious?
Not something school districts must provide for free, which I had no idea. And so that's, what are we, 23 years, that's been basically something that school districts, at least in California, can do. So,
I had no idea this was, I love this podcast because, obviously I'm on it, so it's great. But I love this podcast because I learned something new. Like, you think you know a lot about education and what's going on in education policy, but I am stunned to know that there are schools that don't provide. Like, I knew that there were public, like New York School District, like they use like public buses, and so they provide a subsidy. Like, you know, we subsidize X percentage, so it costs like $1 to ride the bus as opposed to $6 or whatever it is, you know. Like, I get that, and that's a city of, that's New York, where you can't have as many school buses necessarily as you can public buses. You know, it's just it's five boroughs, you know, population of 12 million folks. Like, it's not good, but with a $1.3 billion budget in San Diego, you'd think that they could find the money.
It just kind of feels like they're nickel and diming the parents, you know, because, I mean, obviously these people are paying taxes some way. And
I imagine
back around.
I know this is stereotypical, but probably the ones that could afford to pay that are driving car line anyway.
Well, that's just it, right? So their kids are probably pulling up in Lexus, you know, driving to high school. And meanwhile, you've got some kids who don't have the same means. And really, like, I feel like the free lunch thing is kind of what irks me. Like, it should just kind of be the same qualifying criteria, but apparently it's different. The district provides free transportation for students with disabilities, so as long as their education plan includes transportation as a related service. And some, but
well, not... So it's an essential education service. For some kids.
And some, but not all students who qualify for free meals. Students who qualify for free meals only get free transportation if they attend a magnet school or schools within specific busing patterns designed to promote integration. So if you just take the bus and you qualify for free lunch and the school's, you know, 3 miles away and that's the school you're supposed to go to, it sounds like you're paying, even though you're not financially capable of paying.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, maybe there's another side to it. Like, we just can't. Like, I see that they have a budget shortfall, but to me, transportation's an essential service. Like, that's what you do.
But then the collections thing on top of that. So
I know.
It's kind of a vicious cycle. So then you're ruining these people's credit when they aren't paying. I don't know. Sounds messy.
Yeah, it sounds very messy. It sounds like somebody didn't really think that through. How much money did the article say? How much money was outstanding, Nick?
From 2011 to date, the district has paid Trans World Systems Incorporated, a Delaware-based collection agency, $31,000 to recoup outstanding bus fees. That's just how much they're paying the collections agency to get that money back. It says Trans World helped the district recoup some, but not all of the outstanding fees. In 2014 and 2015, outstanding fees for accounts referred to collections totaled $166,000.
I'm sorry, they're sending parent out of a $1.3 billion budget. They're sending parents to collections over $166,000.
And apparently the collections agency has only been able to recoup 15% of that total.
To me, it just opens the door for them going, well, lunches really aren't a part of public education. You know, we could provide them with a snack
that's
to make
true.
It
good.
Day.
That's
like,
true. That's
a good like, point. What's the next nickel and diming step? You know, we really don't need teachers. We could just put substitutes and... You know, just
wait.
Put them on the internet.
Oh, wait. We already are there. Whoops. <Yeah.
laughs> Hey, guys. I've got a bright idea that I think y'all are really going to like. This interview is pretty powerful. It is a teacher out of Texas who is this year's Teacher of the Year, but she has had a pretty triumphant road to get there. She was actually a high school dropout. Our guest in today's Bright Idea segment has been recently named the 2018 Teacher of the Year for the great state of Texas. Tara Bordeaux is a media arts instructor at Lanier High School in Austin, Texas, and she built a nationally recognized media arts program at her school. And in fact, her students' work has been featured in national advertising campaigns. Tara Bordeaux, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
First, what an honor. There are tons of great teachers in Texas, and you have been selected as Teacher of the Year for the entire state. What's that been like for you?
A roller coaster. It's crazy, and it's very surreal, and I'm still not sure that it really happened, to be honest with you.
And I'm going to mean this as a compliment. You're not the typical teacher. You have this incredible media background. It almost seems like you had a previous life before you became a teacher, where you were doing work over in Hollywood, and when I type in your name in Google, I get an IMDb hit on you and stuff. I mean, tell me about what you were doing before you were teaching.
It definitely feels like another life. Before I got into teaching, I spent some time in Los Angeles, almost 10 years working in television and film production. I did everything from independent film to behind-the-scenes featurettes on DVD, like the value-added material, interview cast and crew and celebrities and put pieces together.
What are some projects that someone might recognize that you've worked on?
I've created featurettes for shows like Sons of Anarchy and Criminal Minds, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Those are some big names. I mean, so you actually are editing video or audio or all of the above?
We would go in and interview the cast and crew, and we would create the featurettes that you find on DVD or behind the scenes interstitials that you find like on HBO and things like that.
Yeah.
And basically I would go in and as a content producer, I would be responsible for making sure that we created a story out of all of that B-roll and camera work. I was a cameraman. I was an editor. Very, very fun job. I loved it.
So now you're taking those skills and you landed this job teaching in Austin, Texas as this media arts instructor. I'm assuming you're taking all those skills you had and you're spreading it to your students, right?
Absolutely. It's kind of one of the reasons why I laugh when people say that I'm a teacher of the year. I still don't see myself as a teacher. 5 years in, I'm still learning how to teach every day from the amazing teachers that I work with. And I kind of approach teaching with a lot of hands-on project-based learning the way that I was taught in the industry. So I try to make this not really like a classroom, but more of an industry experience so that the kids that are taking my program, I tell them on day one, I'm not a teacher, guys. I'm a filmmaker. I'm still learning how to be a teacher. And I teach in a way that gives them more of a real-world experience. And I try to bring professionals into the classroom so that they can work with people who are like me, but at the same time, way more talented or have, you know, had better experiences or more in-depth experiences with this stuff than I have. And so I want them to kind of get that well-rounded, education, if you will. But for the most part, for me, I want them to have an experience. I don't want this to be just a class that they take in high school. I want this to be something that when they leave my program in 4 years, they're taking the skills that when they go into the real world, they can leave here, go into a college class or go into an internship with somebody in the industry and they'll be successful. That's my goal.
I know it's hard to talk about yourself, but I'm gonna try to put you on the spot. What do you think it is about you that separated you to get this nomination as Teacher of the Year for the state of Texas?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know that answer. The only thing that I can think of is that the reason that I was noticed is because of the great work that my kids are doing. My kids have done a great job of getting recognized for their work and for the things that they're doing. And we have a lot of things that here at the campus are noticed. And I think that that's, people just happen to see the program. And so I don't, because, you know, to be very honest with you, nobody comes in your classroom and watches what you're doing teaching. They're just seeing the results of what's happening from your teaching. And so if you ask me how I got it, it's my kids. I have awesome kids and I'm so proud of them. And I thank them all the time because I think that what the accolades that I'm getting right now is because of their hard work and the things that we've done together. It's definitely not something that's just mine alone. And the teachers that I work with, I have great CTE teachers that work with me who show me new things every day. So for me, it took a village.
So your kids, you're talking about the great work that they do. I guess some of their work has actually been featured outside of the school, right?
Yes, it has. Yeah. We've worked with, our school district does some things with American Graduate. So we've done some things with Austin ISD where the kids can go and kind of taking that same skill set that I was doing with my behind the scenes featurettes in LA, I teach the kids to do those same things. And so they do small documentary pieces that have been featured at South by Southwest EDU. They have had work where they've entered screenwriting competitions and they have been selected to, from the scripts that they've written, direct actual Don't Talk, Don't Text, Don't Be Late advertisements for Alamo Drafthouse, which was a national advertising campaign. They work with PBS NewsHour. We're actually a PBS NewsHour student reporting lab. So my kids get to work with the PBS NewsHour team in DC and also here with the local KLRU station. So they're working with mentors here that come in from KLRU and PBS, and they work with those mentors to put their stories on air. And those have been televised both locally and nationally. We just had one of our pieces featuring the Andy Roddick Foundation that was actually televised in New York City with Soledad O'Brien. So wow. The kids are getting to have some pretty cool, they have televised credits. I don't even have a televised credit yet, so I'm a little jealous.
Well, your path to Teacher of the Year is probably unique compared to all the other Teachers of the Year. And hopefully you're comfortable talking about this, but there was a time in your life where you dropped out of school, right?
Absolutely. High school, junior year.
Can you talk to me about that?
It was my junior year in high school, and I was going through a really hard time. I actually went to high school in Mansfield, Texas. And back then, years ago, it was a pretty small town. And there were it was just some, your typical, not the type of bullying that was too bad. I don't want to make this town seem bad. I love Mansfield, I love my friends. But there was just some hard times, very hard times. And I couldn't, as a teenager, really deal with it. And I wasn't really getting along with my parents at home. We were fighting and we didn't see eye to eye. And so nothing felt right. And I dropped out of school. I felt invisible in most of the world.
And you credit a teacher with kind of pulling you back in, huh?
Absolutely. My 11th grade chemistry teacher, Miss Cannon, she actually was the reason that I pursued a career in Hollywood. When I was in 11th grade and I dropped out of school, she actually came to the job. I was working at a McDonald's at the time, and she came to my job, and she sat there for 2 hours until I got to work that night to try to convince me to come back to school. And although I didn't go back to school because I didn't want to face my mistakes and for multiple reasons, what she said and what she did stayed with me my whole life. And the fact that someone, especially a teacher, took the time to come to my job and wait for me just to tell me how important I was and that I should come back to school, she's the reason that I'm here today. She saved my life just having that conversation.
Do you remember what that conversation was like, what she told you?
I can remember to this day everything that she said, what she was wearing, the fact that she ordered a cheeseburger just to make sure that they didn't kick her out of the restaurant. I can word for word. I mean, that I shouldn't drop out of school, that I was worth more than that. And I shouldn't let people get to me and to know that she cared and, what could she do? If there's anything she could do, she would do it. And she had, very sincere look in her eyes and dare I say tears in her eyes. And it, you know, for a young kid who felt like nobody cared and nobody wanted her around, that person did. And sorry, I get a little emotional just thinking about it, but for me, Miss Cannon is she made all the difference in my life just by sitting down and telling me I was worth something and that she saw me.
And I imagine now that you're working with students on a daily basis, that probably is just such a guiding light for you.
It is. I mean, if you were to ask me who my teacher of a lifetime is, it's her. I try to be half or a third of a teacher that she is. And I think I'm still nowhere near the caliber and level of teaching or teacher that Miss Cannon was. And for me, it's what I take into teaching is just to make sure that just like Miss Cannon was with me, is that I love these kids, that I make sure that no kid leaves my class feeling like I don't see them. I never want a student to not know that when they're absent in my class, that, hey, you know, good seeing you again. And I don't make a big deal about it. I don't embarrass them or, you know, make it a big, huge, hey, where were you? It's right. Just the typical, man, glad you're back. Quick sentence, enough for them to know, hey, she noticed that I wasn't here. And when they are in my class, I make sure that I always see every student. Because if she wouldn't have saw me when nobody else, it seemed at the time, did, then I never would have been able to see myself. And that is why I make sure that my kids know I see them every day and that I love them. And they're important and valued in my class. More than anything, more than the content that I teach, it's, do they know I love them?
It's really a great story of paying it forward. Was Miss Cannon allowed to, was she able to make it to the moment when you got Teacher of the Year?
She did. That was the greatest. I connected with her on Facebook and I sent her a message, you know, saying, hey, I'm up for Texas Teacher of the Year. I'm just a semifinalist, but I'd really love for you to make the luncheon. And, I haven't seen Miss Cannon since the day I dropped out of school. So that day at McDonald's, actually. And so when she said, you know, took a couple of days to get back to me. And when she finally said she could make it, I was just, you know, I don't want to dare say it. I think I was more excited to see her than I was to get the award. I was so anxious that day, and we were all standing outside getting ready to go in. And as soon as she came in the room, I knew it was her. The minute she walked in to the, we were at the Bob Bullock Museum and we were in the lobby and there were probably a good 100 people there. And as soon as she came in, the filmmaker in me, of course, sees the cinematic moment where it was like the whole room just stops and here comes, you make eye contact with this person across the room and there she was. And it was probably one of the greatest days of my life to see her again.
You don't happen to have video of that, do you?
I wish somebody caught that, but it was one of those moments where I turned my head and she happened to be there. We have tons of pictures of the two of us together that day, but I wish there was somebody that just caught the moment.
So now you're Teacher of the Year for the state. I guess sometime next year, you're probably going to get to take a trip to Washington, D.C. Is that right?
Yes. I believe from what I was told, we go to D.C. around March or April.
Well, certainly best of luck to you there. Enjoy the trip up to D.C. And, you just have such a great story of perseverance. So I think everyone's really rooting for you. Are you ready for the pop quiz?
I hope so.
All right. first question. If students could only go to school for one subject, which subject should it be?
Can I say my class? Is that fair to say? No. honestly, if it's... I really do want to say my class. English.
English, okay.
Something that has to do with writing and making sure that you can read and write well.
What are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
How to really be creative. We all try. All of us teachers try that. But I think that that is something that, to be really, really creative, I think there's kind of a stigma that you have to be a certain type of creative person. But to really teach how to be creative, that's something that I wish we had like an actual class on just creativity, which probably seems to some crazy, but when you can be creative, you can think about all kinds of ways to solve problems outside the box that, you know, that's such an important skill to have.
So, what does every child deserve?
A fair and equitable chance at an education.
What's the biggest challenge for today's educators?
The ability to be able to just teach. We're getting into a place where, or I'm sorry, we're in a time where test scores, again, because that's the kind of creativity I mentioned before, when you have to teach to a test, you're not really getting to teach, not the way that you'd like to. Mm-hmm. Kids aren't really getting to learn hands-on or project-based learning. You have to change it up. We live in a generation where textbooks and a teacher standing in the classroom, that's not enough to get their attention anymore. So we have to be able to do more innovative things, and teachers need to be given that. We could go into all the challenges with funding and lack of resources and all of that, but if you're asking me to talk about just what hits teachers, not education in general, but just teachers, is just give them the chance to teach, to really support teachers that want to put these students into a level playing field in the future.
What's the best gift to give an educator?
Let's see. We get excited if you give us like a $10 gift card to Office Depot to buy pencils for our classroom. So we're pretty easy. I would say for me, it's just give me more time to spend with my students and less time on paperwork. That's what I like to have. If you really want me to be honest, is more time with my kids, less time on paperwork.
I think time might be the most common answer we've actually ever had. So this is interesting. I think
time. Absolutely. We need more time. There's not enough time in the day to ever get what we want done, ever, it seems like.
All right. This next question, I think I already know the answer to, but I still got to ask, which teacher changed your life?
Well, that's hands down Miss Cannon. Miss Cannon will always be the epitome of what it takes to be a teacher. Or Miss Cannon is definitely the teacher that changed my life, and she will always be, to me, the epitome of what it means to be a teacher.
And last question, pen or pencil?
Oh, pencil. I can always erase the mistakes. Pencil.
All right, good stuff, Tara Bordeaux. Again, thank you so much for taking some of that precious time and spending it with us. I'm really rooting for you as you head up to D.C. next year.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Hope I gave you some good answers there, Nick.
All right, take care. Appreciate it.
All right, you too. Bye. Bye-bye.
That's going to do it for this episode of Class Dismissed. We want to hear from you, so if you want to send us an idea or a comment, remember you can always email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. So if you like what you heard today, please be sure and subscribe to the show, and it wouldn't hurt if you gave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Don't forget you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/classdismissedpodcast or on Twitter. Just search for us by typing in Class Dismiss. On behalf of Russ with School Status and Lissa representing all the teachers out there, I'm Nick Ortego, and I'll talk with you next week.
Class Dismissed. We'll be right back.